Now, we've been talking earlier in the show. We've been drawing up our own 3-4 defense because the rumors now are hot and heavy that there's going to be a new-look Nebraska defense, not just with personnel, you know, talking about Zaire Anderson, talking about David Santos, talking about Curry or Moss, maybe seeing more playing time or perhaps even starting in the case of those two linebackers. But there's the rumors have been coming out that we might see a new-look defense, a 3-4 scheme, and we were trying to put it together earlier in the show, you know, who would fit into these positions, because obviously when they went out and recruited these players, they were recruiting for the scheme that Bo Pelini has been running, and that's the 4-3 with the two-gap look.
Speaking of rumors, and this has always been a policy on this show, whether you believe it or not, if there is a rumor out there about a player leaving the team or a major injury, we always wait until the coaches actually report it. Whether we've confirmed it or not, and you know what's true or not true, we don't. We wait for the coaches to do it just because you never know what could change over the course of a day. So all people who are emailing or tweeting the question about a certain player, we're not going to talk about it. We won't talk about it until it's confirmed.
We really can't.
Just don't really believe in doing it because you never know. I mean, I've seen guys before leave the team. Now I'm even talking about Eric Crouch. Leave the team, walk out, they're gone.
Right.
And by that afternoon, they've come back to the program. So you just never know, and we'll wait for the coaches to talk about that after the game and any injury, after practice, and any injuries that may have happened over the last couple of days, they can comment on that after practice.
We have not received the email yet, at least I don't believe.
I think he sent it out yesterday.
About when practice.
Yeah, he sent it out yesterday. I saw Keith Mann send it out yesterday talking about Wednesday practice. I saw him send it out.
Of course, we have our Husker Max practice reporter, Chris Whitney, who's at every practice.
Yes.
If we get a chance, we'll try to connect with him. Now, the unfortunate thing is sometimes the timing is such where they're huddling up with the coach or they're still waiting for practice to end when we hit our last segment at 5:45, 5:50.
Yeah.
So sometimes, and that's why you don't hear from Chris every day. Usually Thursday is the shorter day of practice, and that's why we usually have Chris on Thursdays. If for some reason we get a chance and we'll stay in communication with him, if we get any word or any confirmation, we'll pass it along to you before the show ends. But to concur with what Michael said, we're just not going to comment on any rumors because it's just irresponsible because it could turn out to be completely false. And then who's got the egg on our face?
Us.
We do.
And so you talked about the 3-4. Now, that's a rumor that we're all about talking about.
Oh, yeah.
If we get to place people like a chessboard or a checkerboard, I'm all for that. And so we were discussing.
You know, we need one of those electric football games so we can actually put the pieces down.
Have a little 55, little Stein cooler.
Oh, yeah.
Have a little 97. That'd be kind of cool.
I had one
to the side.
I had Cowboys versus Steelers.
I
always made sure the Cowboys lost.
I had one that you would have liked to have. I had to run the Rams.
Nice.
I had the Rams one, yep.
It was always so hard to like take the uniform number and stick it on the back because they were so tiny.
Yeah. Well, what he would do is, and this is one of the things that my cousin taught me, you could take it and you could put it under a heat source, whether it be a hot light, and they would kind of expand. So my Franco Harris from that game was enormous. And so you expand him and you paint, and you expand and you paint. And he was just big old thick Franco Harris that I'd put out there. And, you know, you had the little wheel on the bottom to direct what direction you want him to go. And you kind of turn it to the side and have him just run through everybody.
Right.
Which was a good time.
See, my mom sews.
Yeah.
So she had a lot of stick pins for sewing. I would always take the stick pin and stick it through Roger Staubach's head.
That's not nice.
Well, that's just the way I roll.
That's not nice. So
Dallas is evil.
In the 3-4, they got to find a nose tackle, right? That's the key to the position, a key to that formation. You also got to find guys to play the defensive end of the 5-tech, and you got to find outside linebackers. For nose tackle, I listed Randall, Steinkuhler, or Curry. Randall and Curry being better built for it.
Yeah.
The 5-techniques are ends. Meredith and Steinkuhler. I don't think Meredith fits well in that spot, but he's a body. If not, Kevin Williams or maybe Avery Moss.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the outside for the outside linebackers, Ankra, Carter, and Martin. And maybe you throw Fisher in there with a chance to be one of those guys as well.
Now, one of the things you mentioned about the nose is, and we were talking in terms of, I think, was it, well, we were talking about Chase Rome, and you thought he was too big, too tall.
I thought he is too upright.
Right.
To play, you've got to be low or really, really strong. I don't think he's strong enough or gets low enough to play the nose, but I like him as a 5-technique.
But what about Steinkuhler? He's tall, too.
He is, but I think he's got better leverage. When you watch those two guys during a game, neither one of them is overly impressive against that double team, but One or the other is Steinkuhler. That's why I say the two guys that fit body-wise best are Randall and Curry.
Right.
Because Randall is low-bottomed, really low-bottomed, almost like an African-American woman, and he is really low-bottomed. And then Curry also fits kind of in that body style as well, so he could be a guy that could get in there. Steinkuhler only because I say that he's the most experienced guy. If you're going to put him in a position of a new position, a nose tackle that nobody's playing really, I say you give him a shot at it. But I'd like him better at the five technique and have either Curry or Randall play that nose.
It's one thing to be talking about, you know, after just two games, already making switches, you know, to positions.
They gave up the second amount.
I understand that. But the talk, some of the talk has been, this is panic mode. You're already talking about replacing guys, making wholesale changes at positions. If Nebraska decides to go to a 3-4 and essentially change their scheme for most of the rest of the season, because neither you or I think, if they were to do this, that it would be permanent from the standpoint of they're going to have to adjust back when they're playing run-heavy teams like Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But wouldn't this smack of a little bit of desperation for a guy like Bo Pelini, who's not coached the 4-3, has always coached...
The
3-4, right. Has always coached the 4-3, has always coached the two-gap system. To make a change like this, that to me would smack a lot more of maybe a desperation play than just saying, hey, Santos or Anderson, you're in, and Whaley, you're out.
Well, they played some 30 front. I mean, he's done it against Missouri, and they've done it in some other games, especially a lot with that Joker where that guy is standing up.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen it happen. They've done it. Not as a full-scale change of scheme. Now, you want to talk about desperation. How about if you're the 103rd rushing team in the country and you're Wisconsin and you fire your offensive line coach? I mean, that, I think, is more desperation than if you just changed your scheme for a team that was more wide open. You look and you go, I don't have enough skill up front to get pressure this way. I need to get more speed on the field. Let's go 3-4 and let's do that against Arkansas State. Let's do that against Ohio State. Let's do it against Michigan. I understand that. I don't think that's desperation. I think that's just going to a better scheme that fits you.
And
it's not firing somebody like Wisconsin did.
Sure. And we've already been talking throughout the week about how 4-3 versus 3-4 aside, eliminating the two gap, going to a more of a one gap system, or dropping a safety down into the box to cover the run a little bit better, or backs coming out of the backfield. That, you know, is every bit as strategic a change as whether or not you got four men across the line or three. Here's Ed. Here's on 402-951-1620. Ed, welcome. You're on Unsportsmanlike Conduct.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment on the coaching staff. When Bo Pelini first got hired 5 years ago, when he was running the defense completely himself, we had a pretty good defense. I know we had some better athletes, but I think, in my opinion, when he hired the new offensive coordinator and the new defensive coordinator, shouldn't he hire a higher caliber of guys, or is he worried about someone taking some of the light from him as being a head coach, you know, Bo Pelini? And that's just my opinion. I just wanted to hear what you guys thought about that, is that's why he don't go out and hire more qualified guys to run our offense or run the defense.
I think of that a little bit different way, because you always hire people that you know. I mean, you rarely ever hear about a guy going out and just getting someone they've never had any connection with, you know?
Right.
That doesn't happen. Greg Madison's probably a good example from Michigan. I don't believe he and Brady Hoke ever crossed paths, because Brady Hoke was in college and Greg Madison was in the pros, and maybe they did early on. Mm-hmm. But you always go get those guys. Well, you hire guys that you know, that you can trust, and that you will do and run what you want to run because you're the head coach.
Right.
I would rather Bo get a guy that was more experienced defensive coordinator. I would have rather last year they got somebody who was a more experienced play caller. But he knows Tim Beck. He's known Tim Beck for years. You know, he knows Papuchis. He brought, essentially, Papuchis into the business.
Right.
In a
as
way,
a
because
assistant.
He was a grad assistant. I know he was at Kansas before that, but he really helped him along in his career. He knows him. He knows Joseph from when they were at LSU. So he knows these guys. That's what he's bringing in, guys he knows. Will they be good in 2 or 3 years? You got to give them the chance to find out.
Right.
I know there was a lot of people in 03 when I started working in this job that were saying, hey, give this 03 crew a chance, more than just 1 year. And they never did. And so we ended up coming back to it in 2008. So let's see. Let's see his new recreated staff, how that happens. What happens with it.
Steve, welcome. You're on Unsportsmanlike Conduct.
Yeah, you guys keep talking about the one gap, two gap, three gap deal.
Yeah.
Can you explain that to us novices that don't really know what exactly that means?
Steve, I'm glad you asked the question, Michael.
It's just what you're saying. I mean, if you have one guy who's responsible for two gaps, which means if you, and I always tell people, think of the gaps as starting with the center on offense and him being zero.
He's
okay,
zero.
And then out from there, every single gap and every single man, or every single shoulder and every single man has a number. So from zero to one to two, like a three technique is that outside shade of the guard just by counting shoulders or gaps. When you talk about a two gap, when you line up, that guard and that center, if you're lining up there in that one gap, you're going to be taking on both those guys, right? Or one guy and either side of him, however you want to define that. But so your job is to get that guy and determine if you're going to go to his left or his right, meaning that you're checking both those gaps. One gap is when you see a guy a lot of times that will just shoot that gap. You know, he's lined up over a guy and just goes inside of him. That's
right.
A one-gap technique opposed to having to worry about either side of the one guy you're blocking.
Okay, well, now you guys are talking about changing to the 3-4 from the 4-3.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that, I mean, wouldn't you rather act than react? I mean, back in the day, and I know we're talking about the glory days of, you know, 92, 3, 4, 5.
Right.
We just brought more guys than they could block, and we just got after it.
Sure.
Now, all of a sudden, it's almost like looking at poor number 51 in chase mode. That's what our coaches are doing. If they change this, it's like we're chasing our tail. That we don't know what the heck we've been doing for 5 years, and if we're going to change it midstream, that doesn't bode well for the whole system, does it?
No, it doesn't.
I mean, really, I mean, I hate to say it, but Cameron Meredith, why does he even have a scholarship?
Well, you know, and as we try to piece together what we would look like in a 3-4, we can certainly discuss further in detail later on here in the show. We are past time for a break. Need to get to one. We'll come back and have more. Don't forget, keep listening for the Thud Up drop and your chance to win a Miller Lite tailgate pass to this weekend's game against Arkansas State here on 1620 The Zone.